Thanks for subscribing to the ZonCon podcast, the podcast all about Amazon conversations. These are the tips and tricks to become an Amazon millionaire. Here is your host, Andrew Erickson. He is all things Amazon, and so is this podcast. Let's have an Amazon conversation.
Hey, guys. Welcome back to the ZonCon podcast. This is Andrew Erickson, as always, your host. I am in a new office, so I might sound a little weird, but it is the same old Andrew Erickson, your host, as always. And I am here with my longtime partner, Mike Yeh. Mike, thanks for jumping on.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, Mike, you've had a couple episodes before. The one that's most popular was the Organizing a $1 Million Team. We'll put a link to that in the show notes. You guys can listen to that. That is my third highest performing episode. So congratulations for being number three.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm surprised by that because I'm generally not the most organized person, but we don't have to worry about that.
I always tell people that, and they're like, I tell people, I'm like, I'm not that organized. They're like, if you're not organized, oh my God, there's no hope for the rest of us. I'm like, I don't feel organized, but I guess I'm okay sometimes. So today we have some fun news. Oh, and by the way, also, you should have been in the podcast before this one, which we recorded about 6 months ago. And I don't even remember exactly what was in that episode. So we're just kind of like, hopefully go with the flow because it was several months ago. Because the reason why we are doing these episodes so far apart is because we have some major news that has happened to us. That's a big, awesome, life-changing event. Mike, what happened recently?
Oh, we sold our business.
Woo!
Exciting.
Awesome. And Mike, I want to celebrate with you. So
yeah.
I have a beer. I have a Trappel, New Belgian, Trappel, oh, nice. Belgian style.
I'm still buying San Diego, not San Diego, but Southern California beers.
Oh, and New Belgium is a Colorado beer. So
that's right. That's kind of strange.
All right. We're going to.
Maybe we're in the wrong places. I'm not sure.
There we go. Hopefully the mic picks that up. And then we'll cheers. Cheers.
Cheers. Virtual cheers.
Here, we'll go to clink. Clink.
Nice. Awesome.
All right. Very excited. Very happy. It was a much longer and much more difficult road than I expected to travel down. It was more difficult because I thought it was going to be really easy, and it was medium. Yeah. Not easy. Yeah. So, Mike, I wanted to talk to you just because it's like a fresh, fun time to talk about this stuff. We did just get the money deposited into the checking account, which is the first chunk of change, which is a six-figure amount. That is a very nice number. So I wanted to just like talk about the whole process and how much fun it was and wasn't, and the pros and cons and all the stuff that we went through. So in the last episode, I hope I got this right. Last episode, we talked about the different brokerages and the different ways we thought why we decided to go with who we did, which was Empire Flippers. And I want to talk about the whole process of going through the Empire Flippers process. And you kind of led a lot of the little intricacies of that process. So first, why don't you recap a little bit why we picked Empire Flippers, and we can kind of go through the chronological thing, what happened through the whole process.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, we definitely felt a lot of alignment with Empire Flippers and the way that they are very process oriented. I'm sure, you know, most of your audience knows that both you and I are very process oriented. That's how we run our businesses. That's just our personalities. And I think, you know, seeing that Empire Flippers seemed to have a process for every single thing, and it seemed like they had everything down to a science, and, you know, the people there were super cool to talk to. Not that the other people that we talked to elsewhere weren't awesome as well, but, you know, at the end of the day, like, I don't think that we could have really gone wrong with our decisions. There were a lot of great options, but I don't know. Like, I think just the kind of the camaraderie that we built with Empire Flippers leading up to the decision to sign with them ultimately led to that decision. And I will say that there was definitely a roller coaster of emotions in that, like, before we went into the sale. I know you were, you know, you're a big audiobook and just normal books person, and you were feeding me all sorts of exit books, and all of them were basically like, this is going to suck. So my mindset was like, this is going to suck. And then we talked to the Empire Flippers guys, and they were like, oh no, this is going to be so easy. It's going to go so fast. You guys are going to come out way ahead of where you think you are. And then that didn't happen the way we expected to. So it did drag out longer than we expected to. So definitely a little bit of up and down, but I feel like we're back on the up now that it's all squared away and we're done. I just keep thinking that, you know, that scene from Lord of the Rings. I don't even know anything about Lord of the Rings, but I always see that meme of where, like, you know, where it just says it's done. Like, that's that's how I feel right now. And yeah, anyway, went off on a bit of a tangent.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, I guess the big thing that I liked about Empire Flippers is honestly a lot of them are fantastic. So we are actually going to be interviewing Elevate, which is a aggregator, soon on this podcast. They're going to talk a little bit about the pros and cons of brokerages also. But we did go with Empire Flippers. And so the big thing that I think we talked about this in the last episode, but the big thing was that they had, like you said, Mike, the systems and processes. They had this like whole methodology where they like reconstruct your P&L. And we have a P&L. We have an accountant. He's been on the podcast before too, Chakra. Just type in accounting. You'll see your accountant, whatever. You'll see a podcast from him. He's an awesome accountant. We have an accountant who does all of our books for us, but Empire Flippers did the books for us as well. And there are two positives of that happening. There was a major con, two positives. The two pros were that they have a standard methodology that they use that when the buyers come to buy, they know this is the methodology they use because that is a standard Empire Flippers methodology. So we can evaluate them based on the other deals we've seen, which I think that is the big, like, I think that's a big value add that Empire Flippers has, is that they have that standard methodology. The second one is that the way they calculated the COGS or the landed cost of the product, the landed cost was actually a little bit lower than the way we calculated it. And it wasn't wrong. Wasn't they were wrong, we were right, or vice versa. It was just a different methodology. There's a whole like average and FIFO and LIFO, and it's complicated and boring. I'm not going to bore you guys with the details. But they did calculate our COGS a bit lower. We're talking $10,000, $15,000. But when you get that 3-4x multiple on that 10,000, that was a good chunk of change. And so that was a big reason I was like, oh, those are two very nice pros. But Mike, what was the big con of having to redo our P&L?
Basically having to redo with the P&L. Yeah.
The work associated.
There was a lot of upfront work. Yeah. Yep. I mean, it's nice that they have the templates all created and it's all very intuitive. And I am very thankful that we had internal P&Ls because a lot of it was just, you know, more or less translating stuff over from our stuff to their stuff. They do pull down all the Amazon data through API. So that's all pre-populated. But yep, there was a lot of upfront legwork to get everything set up. But once that was done, I thought it was, you know, smooth sailing for the most part. That just turned into the challenge of actually, you know, talking to tons and tons of buyers and going through all those meetings. So
how many buyers did we talk to
at Just Empire Flippers?
That's part of the story. We had some inside Empire Flippers and some outside Empire Flippers, but just at Empire Flippers, how many did we end up talking to roughly?
I feel like, I don't know, maybe 8 or 9, would you say?
Yeah, I was going to say like 10-ish, maybe a dozen. I think I took 1 or 2 calls without you. I forget. I think so.
Okay.
Whatever. 10-ish. 8, 10, yeah. Whatever. I was told, here's a good piece of advice for everybody listening. When you exit, write this down. If you're taking notes at home, write this down. When you exit, talk to as many people as you can. It never hurts. It burns an hour of your time. Generally, these calls are fairly friendly. They're fairly easy. They're kind of giving a vibe check from you. Are you a trustworthy person? Do you understand how the business works? Can you please explain these little nuances? Like, why did you stock out so much? Why is your product like this? Why is your product like that? What do you see as a growth opportunity? So those were all kind of like good little things. So the conversations are pretty easy. They generally were kind of 45 minutes or so, 30 to 60 minutes. And so, yes, take as many calls as you can, because the more opportunities you have, the more windows you open, the more doors you open, the more opportunities you have to have better deals, right? You never know if that sixth person or that eighth person that you talked to 2 months ago is going to come back with a nice offer, which actually ended up how it worked out for us. It was, I think the person who bought our company was actually, I would say he was probably the seventh person we talked to.
Yeah. And we were kind of talking on and off. Like, it wasn't like a very immediate, like, yep, this is happening. It was, we talked to him, things didn't work out. And we basically thought that was the end of that. But then I don't remember exactly how the whole conversation went down, but basically it was like he showed genuine interest even after, you know, the initial discussion kind of fell apart, even after I thought that that was the end of that. And we just kept working with him and eventually came to something that we were all happy with. So I guess that's another thing is like, you know, don't write people off prematurely. Like they may end up meeting you somewhere where you're happy. And that's, yeah, that's what happened with us. Yeah.
It's funny too, because like some of the people that I also the vibe check, like, oh wow, I had a great chemistry with that person over Zoom. I was like, oh my God, we were like, we talked about camping. It was super cool. And he also has a daughter the same age, and like, oh wow, we're so simpatico. Like, it was amazing. They're totally gonna give us a bunch of money for our company. And then 3 days later we get an email saying, like, you suck. Never talk to me again. Like, what? Why? I thought he liked us. And then the vice versa, when we had people who I kind of didn't, they're all great. They're all professional, but some of them were like too professional. You know what I mean? Like too, like, well, the book, the number statistically says this and that, whatever. And I'm like, okay, this person isn't really like, you're like, oh, why did you stock out? Why is this like that? Why did you do this? That doesn't look right. I'm like, I don't know, man. I don't understand this stuff sometimes, right? And those ended up being the people who gave us offers.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Definitely a roller coaster of emotions in that sense. I totally relate to what you're talking about. I know so many of those calls, you know, you and I would tag up right afterwards and be like, man, that went awesome. And then we just never hear from the people. And then we check in with Empire Flippers and they're like, yeah, those guys weren't interested. I'm like, what? Like, yeah, surprising. So, you know,
Canadians, Canadians are so nice. And I called our broker sales guy, whatever, our rep guy who helped us. And I was like, they seem so awesome. They must love us, right? And he's like, yeah, they kind of do that to everybody. They're Canadians. They're just super nice. I'm like, oh, they're just a bunch of flirts then? They're not interested. They're just flirting. Okay. All right. I get it.
So, I thought that was going to work out with those guys. Yeah, for sure.
I really like those guys.
Oh, yeah, well. They were super nice.
So one thing that was, again, actual content for you guys who are listening, take as many calls as possible. Now, one thing we did talk to people outside of Empire Flippers just to get kind of like a good check, just to kind of see like, are these potential people who we can talk to outside of Empire Flippers? We did talk to kind of like a friend of a friend, and they ended up being actually a decent offer from them at the very beginning, though. It was a little bit lower than what we expected. And we went into... when we actually, at the end of the day, the first offer we got was actually a pretty good offer now that we kind of look at it retroactively, but we ended up not going with that just because I didn't know. My expectations were extremely high, and we came in with like, I had extremely high expectations and we finished with like medium high results, right? So, so there's that tiny zone of expectations not meeting results, which is like a little zone of disappointment. But still executed pretty well, had that medium high return, which is pretty good.
To be fair, though, I think our expectations were set maybe a little unfairly high from, you know, our discussions with Empire Flippers. Like, we came in thinking, all right, we're going to be right here. And then they were like, you guys are going to be way up here. And we're like, what? That's awesome. So, of course, you know, that initial offer we got, which was actually a pretty good offer, we didn't think it was that great at the time. But, you know, that's just the way it goes. So, but in full disclosure, though, just want to make sure that it's clear here that when we spoke to those other people outside of Empire Flippers, that was beyond our exclusivity period with Empire Flippers, right? So
that's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah. We maintained the terms of the contract and made sure that, you know, after we were still without a buyer, once we passed that exclusivity period, that's when we started reaching out to other people individually just to see if, you know, we could open up the pool a little more than just the pool of people that Empire Flippers had. So,
and that first offer we got was actually before we signed exclusivity with Empire Flippers.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just, yeah, that's a good point, Mike. Thanks for clarifying for in case the Empire Flippers lawyers are listening to us. We did satisfy every sentence of the entire contract. So yes, we did. But yeah, ultimately, okay, so now that's a good question. There are aggregators out there who will just evaluate your business and give you an offer. So why go to a broker, right? And some ways you don't need to. You can go directly to those aggregators. And we are talking to Elevate Brands here pretty soon on the podcast. And so they are an example of a brand that, in fact, the Elevate podcast might actually come out before this series does. So they're actually a company that buys, they're just an aggregator, and they're worth checking out for sure. But I will say that the aggregators have a very clear target. You need to have a certain profit and a certain revenue and a certain percentage. And if you don't satisfy 11 of their 12 check marks, they won't give you an offer. So we unfortunately didn't satisfy all those check marks. We satisfied only 9 of the 12 check marks or 10 of the check marks. And I'm like, we're so close though. They're like, So I ended up not working out with the aggregators, but you can always sell a business. Doesn't matter. It's just a little bit different depending on your characteristics and stuff. So when we went to Empire Flippers, we did have fairly high expectations. We were shooting for a 4x multiple, and we actually ended up settling closer to a 3x multiple. So it wasn't quite as high as we expected, but only because we had high expectations. So there are a lot of stories you'll hear about people getting like a 5x and a 20x and a 1,000,000x payout. But I don't know. When I talk to those people, they're like, yeah, I got a 7x multiple. I'm like, wow, that's amazing. How did you get that? And they'll say, oh, okay. So it's a 1x up front. And then 1x a year later, as long as the company doesn't fall down. And then I get half of all the growth. But the growth, they're gonna 5-10x my business. So if I get half of 10x, it's like 5x. So I get one today, one a year from now, and 5x in the business, 10x growths, right? Grows 10x, right? I'm like, that's so cool. Good for you. I'm so happy you're gonna get a 7x multiple. The business growing 10x, that just seems, I'm just a bit skeptical of that. And so we didn't really entertain much offers of people who are telling us that they were going to like 3x and 10x our businesses. We really wanted to go for like cash now with a little bit of payout later, but like a really more of a done deal as opposed to like a big potential, like a potential for 1, 2, 3, 4 years in the future. And so we really wanted to focus on that cash now. And Mike, do you want to explain a little bit why we wanted to focus on the cash now?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it was really just because, or at least in my opinion, it was, we don't know these people that are saying that they're going to 3 or 4x the business over the next year or two. I mean, if they had a, you know, a substantial and transparent track record of being able to do that, then I think we would have been much more open to earn out components in the offer. But, you know, when you're just talking to a random person you've never met before, and they're basically telling you that they can do, like basically run your business way better than you could, it's a little suspicious. Do I believe that there are people out there that can run the business better than we can? Absolutely. But to be able to grow that amount in that short of a time and to have our payout be tied to that, I was a little, you know, skeptical of that. And I didn't really want to be greedy about it. I'm down to take a smaller offer up front with lower risk. And you know, that's just my personality, differs for, you know, everyone out there. So, but that's what it boiled down to, in my opinion.
Yep. And I completely agree. And the big thing too, is that this is a big de-risking opportunity for me and for you too, Mike.
Yeah.
This wasn't like, like there's a 50% chance I'm going to double or a 50% chance I'm going to go broke. Right. I'm not doing like a Vegas, like throw it all in red at the roulette table. You know, like, let's go big, right? And like, that's cool. If you want to do that, like, more power to you. But for me, I'm like, you know what? A 3x multiple, $1 million exit, like, that sounds pretty fantastic. That allows me to get into a nice house. That gives me the opportunities to support my family and get my kid now to fund a college account. Get that stuff kind of like that, you know, proper boring dad stuff figured out, right? And I have stocks and a little bit of Bitcoin, whatever, not a lot, but a little bit of Bitcoin, whatever. That's fine. I take risks other places. I don't need to like take a $1 million offer and try to double it next year.
Right.
Some people do. That's awesome. Go for it. Go hard. I would rather take $1 million today rather than $2 million 2 years from now with a 50% chance of not getting anything.
Right, right. With that said, though, I am genuinely curious and I am going to be following our business just to see if they are able to pull that off. And you know what? Maybe I'll have that in the back of my head the next time we exit a business. Like, yeah, these people are fully capable of doing that. And the earnout things are maybe not as big of a risk as we think it is. I don't know. I'm just, you know, I'm genuinely interested in seeing if they're able to pull that off. And if they are able to, I want to know how they do it so that we can do that, you know, like there's a lot to be learned there. So
that's actually a good segue into the next thing I wanted to ask. What's next for Andrew and Mike? What are we doing now?
We already started our other brand, which is, wow, it's did we make our first sale on September 1st? It's almost the 1 year anniversary of our new brand.
Yeah, it is.
A couple of days out from that. So, you know, that has been taking up most of our time. I mean, that's a large reason why we wanted to exit out of the first brand, because the new one is just, we're in a growth phase and it's taken up a ton of our time. But, you know, we're continuing to do that, grow that business, hopefully an exit with that, you know, a couple of years down the line. And I don't know, I want to dabble in different investments with some of the liquidity that, you know, that I can play around with now. You know,
what kind of investments that you want to share?
I'm
comfortable sharing.
So I'll be honest, I'm scared of real estate. I know real estate's great to get into. I know you're into it. I get stressed out even like paying my own mortgage. So I just don't think real estate's for me. What I do feel comfortable enough in is, you know, growing Amazon, not me growing them, but Amazon businesses or e-commerce businesses in general that are in a growth trajectory, that are looking for some seed funding to be able to expand and fulfill their growth potential. And so, you know, that's, if those opportunities arise, I'm definitely interested in parking a little cash in some of those and seeing how that goes. Cause that I feel comfortable enough. I feel like I have enough domain knowledge with the e-commerce and Amazon side of things that I could comfortably put some money into that and treat it responsibly, or, you know, make good enough decisions in that sense. Real estate, I'd be like, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm going to put my money, I'm going to put a down payment on here. Oh no, what do I do now? Like, I don't know.
All right. We'll have to do a whole episode on the Mike and Andrew venture capital, e-com venture capital fund that you, the listener, can participate in as an investor. Absolutely. Or a receiver. So maybe someday soon, hopefully. Maybe next episode.
That's quick.
No, it will not be next episode. Yeah, I think so. We just started like Mike said, the last brand a year ago. A bit of a lesson learned. People want to see growth. Our brand that we sold was solid. Let's say roughly $1.5 million a year in revenue. $1.5 million revenue. Solid for 3 years, sitting in that seven-figure revenue for 3 years, returning, you know, 20%-ish in profit. So a solid, consistent, long, I considered 3 years in the e-com world, long-term investment, long-term in the e-com world, right? And I thought that was like a pro. Other people want to see like a 40% year-over-year growth. And that's when you start getting that like 4, 5, 6, 7x multiples, because they're selling the growth potential, right? And when you sell that, like, yeah, it's flat and consistent. Consistency, I thought, sounds awesome, right? If you have an investment in Chevron or in IBM, whatever company, and they're like, yeah, we consistently pay out 6%, 8% every single year to our investors, and we have for 100 years. Yeah. Those companies generally have pretty awesome evaluations because they've been doing it for, they're consistent, but they don't have the Tesla and the Amazon evaluations because they're not high growth industries. And so that was one thing. I think if we had maybe focused a little bit more energy on the brand we exited on and just try to somehow force that 20% growth year over year, because we could have done that if we had.
We could have totally done that. Yeah.
Yeah. It just was.
I didn't realize the significance of it at the time, though. Like you were saying, I mean, we were happy with just steady, consistent. I'm always happy with, you know, just steady, consistent income revenue. But yeah, I mean, that's, yeah, lessons learned and something we'll keep in mind for the current brand. But on that note, though, one thing that I think is very important for people to be aware of is, like, it's at least in the selling buying market, it seems like everyone just cares about revenue growth. You know, you and I, we did this whole exercise to increase profit because we're like, profit's important, right? At least we thought it was. And we successfully increased our profit, did it very well over, you know, the course of the past year and a half, 2 years. What we found talking to all these buyers is that they did not care about increases in profits. They cared more about the fact that the revenue was flat. And so, you know, by reducing our expenses and finding more efficient ways to do things, we grew our profit tremendously. And no matter how much we tried to highlight that fact, that aspect of the business, it seemed like no one cared about that, which was really shocking to me because still, you know, even now after having been through this whole selling experience, I still feel like profit's more important. But maybe that's just me. I don't know. Like, I don't know. But I think that's a good, you know, good bit of a lessons learned to share here is like, apparently, you know, as long as your revenue's on the uptrend, that's a bit more important than your profit being on the uptrend.
So I think, yes, I completely agree with that. I think profit thresholds are really important because that was a lot of the aggregators had thresholds of like $500,000 a year in profit and we weren't there. Mm-hmm. And they just said like, well, sorry, I'm like, well, we're kind of sort of a little close. And they're like, yeah, not really. And so the thresholds are really important on profit. So if you hit that threshold, 400,000, 500,000, that's a big threshold right there before you start looking really appetizing to aggregators. And then once you hit the profit threshold, then it's revenue growth, year-over-year growth. That's really important. Another one too is just like a simple business model. A lot of them, when I've talked to other people, and I've talked to other buyers, they want to have kind of like straightforward, okay, you have 5 products, you have 10 products, they are in the same net. Oh, one thing, we've said it before, branding is really important. People really care about the brand. A lot of these companies are like, we only do baby and we only do athletic wear. That's it. We just have those 2 brands, right? Those 2 niches, right? And what they do is they kind of like, they buy a bunch of baby brands together and they kind of do like the Procter & Gamble model. What Procter & Gamble does, like they buy out that, you know, they're the ones who own Clorox and Listerine. And I think they do, whatever. There's the big aggregators do all that stuff, right? But it's all in the home sanitation or home cleaning niche, right? And so, yeah, branding is really important. Do not be some stupid like everything store where you're selling 14 different things, like a back scratcher, a garlic press, a phone case, like a bunch of random stuff like that. Branding is really important. And niche, focusing on niche is really important.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then, okay, now let's talk about the aggregators or the people who kind of put themselves out there as people who buy Amazon businesses outside of brokers. One thing I did talk to a bunch of them, and a bunch of them came to the broker. So of course, if you were selling to a very well-known aggregator, you probably don't need a brokerage, honestly, except for the fact that every aggregator that I talked to, and we got offers from some of them, they all would say, oh, you know that brokerage fee, that 10% brokerage fee? You don't have to pay that. That's awesome, right? This offer is awesome. It's 9.5% lower than what you would get at the brokerage, but you don't have to pay the brokerage fee. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. If I pay the broker 12% and you're reducing your fee by 10%, I'm effectively paying you the brokerage fee. Why would I pay you the brokerage fee? That's stupid. And so that's the big reason why I thought the brokerage was actually pretty awesome, is that generally people were kind of just giving a little bit healthier offers because they knew there was that fee. And when you go outside a broker, they kind of reduce that cost, they reduce that offer by a little bit.
Yeah, that was kind of bizarre. I don't understand that line of thinking, but, you know, to each their own.
Yeah. So overall, Mike, are you happy with Empire Flippers?
I'm very happy with them. I will admit that I wasn't sure that we needed a brokerage until I feel like we're really getting the value on the back end as far as migration goes. Because I feel like we could have handled everything up until that point. We had our P&Ls. We could have, and we did schedule calls outside of the brokerage. And so, you know, for a while, I was kind of questioning, like, why are we paying this substantial fee for all the stuff that we can do on our own and that we have been doing on our own? I'll say that the migration portion of this, like trying to figure out all the little intricacies of handing over all the accounts and doing it properly, and that part, I'm totally down with their hand holding on, you know, like that part was a little scary to me, and they've done a really great job with their migration team. So props to their migration team on everything that, you know, the whole team has been great. It's just, I feel like we could have handled everything on our own, except for maybe the migration stuff, or we probably could have gotten through the migration on our own as well. It probably just would have been a little more bumpy and taken a little bit longer than it is taking. So thankful for that.
I am happy to not use a broker once we've done two deals.
Yeah.
If once we hit our third and fourth and fifth and 20th deal, then I think a broker probably doesn't offer as much value.
Sure.
Not for as much as they're taking.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't even know how many issues we would have run into if we hadn't used a broker. Because like, right. Who knows? At the end of the day, you know, if we're 2 months into a contract closing, and all of a sudden they come back and they say, hey, wait a minute. This one thing on your P&L was not right. We're disagreeing with it, and we're going to dock you. We're going to cut out $30,000 because this one line item wasn't correct. We're taking out $30,000, and that 4x multiple, that actually 4x times 30, we're going to take out $120,000 on this offer because of that P&L line item. Like, I don't know how I would have responded to that. I'd be like, hey, that sucks. Can you not do that? And if they say, sorry, we're doing it, I'd be like, okay. You're the big company that has $300 million. Yeah. So I don't, and I'm the guy who has like a couple thousand bucks, you know, like, so it, there's a lot of the issues I don't even know we didn't face because we didn't face them.
Yeah. I seem to recall that there was mention that you could bring in, you know, your own legal team and stuff like that. And luckily we didn't have to do it. I mean, with Empire Flippers, you know, if you have a pretty standard sale, you don't have to do anything outside of their boilerplate templates. You just fill out the information and on both sides and everything just works out. So, but I could see where legal fees could add up really quickly if you had something a little more complicated, or the, you know, the example that you just mentioned, like if you have to bring in, you know, a legal counsel to help with that kind of stuff, I could very quickly see you exceeding the cost of the commission of the brokerage. So in that sense, you know, things worked out.
So end of the day, let's recap here. So yay, first of all, yay, exit. It is real money. It is life-changing money. Very excited. It happened. It was a thing we've wanted to do for a long time, and yay, it happened. So super excited. That's the first recap. Second of all, if you are thinking of selling your business, if you're thinking of selling your business, then consider it. It is something we should talk about and you should think about. It's something that it's real. It really happens. Real people really sell their real businesses to other real people and get real money from it. Yes, it's true. Second of all, there are some issues to look out for. If you can get your profit above that $400,000, $500,000 mark per year, then you get into a whole new threshold of like buyers, and the whole thing is like awesome. But yeah, as long as you're over 100,000 profit, there is a lot of buyers. If you're more than 10,000, less than 100,000, there is, I don't know quite as much about that, but I know people who have exited that much. It's not quite as like appetizing, but it does work. It does happen. Brokers, people like seeing those profit thresholds. They like seeing revenue growth. That's really important. Growth, simple business plans, simple business strategies work really well. And in general, we are, yes, on brokers.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And to your second point there, yes, the selling the business part thing really resonates with me, because I know we've been joking around back and forth on this for years now. I think you always calculated part of the business as part of your net worth. And I was always like, nope, it's not part of mine because it's not real. Like, I just, you know, I just couldn't accept the fact that there was actual value, like that the business could be sold for real money. And now it has been converted to real money. And so, yes, it's now real. I'm very happy about that one for sure.
So now the nice thing is we have all these issues with taxes we're going to have to figure out. So I'm like, these are nice issues to have. So
yeah,
we'll probably have maybe a month or two or three from now, we'll have some fun podcasts about tax planning if you got a little bit of a windfall. So
yeah.
But yeah, Mike, so awesome. I'm excited. If you guys want to learn how to, or want to talk to Empire Flippers, let them know that you heard about them on the ZonCon podcast that Andrew Erickson referred you, because they do give us a referral commission. And I'm also happy, if you do want to talk about this stuff, I would be really happy to jump on a call with you if you wanted to. If you just want to email me at andrew@andrewknowsamazon.com. Even if you're looking at selling in like a year or 2 years or whatever, let them know that referral commission. It helps us pay for the podcast and stuff like that. And it's at no cost to you, because they just kind of pay out us whatever. And again, we're actually going to be talking to a few other aggregators later that you don't have to go through a brokerage if you don't want to. And we're going to be talking to those aggregators about how to do that. But through personal experience, yes, we did use Empire Flippers, and yes, we did like them. So, and we're very happy and very excited. And the plan now is just to rinse, and it's a lather, rinse, repeat. Rinsing in terms of selling. Now we are lathering up our business and hopefully rinsing in a year or two from now to sell our next business. And then we will just repeat forever. So right, Mike, on. Excited. Thank you for being here. Any last words for our people?
Oh, good luck. Good luck in the mindset of selling your business. Absolutely. It's real. It is real. And it's something that took me way longer than it should have to accept. But yeah, good times at the end of the tunnel.
Awesome. Thanks, Mike. Thanks for being here.
And thanks for
cheers. I finished my beer. Cheers. I wish I had to. I will have a few more tonight.
Right on. Cheers, buddy.
All right. Cheers, buddy.
All right. Have a good one.
That's it, guys. Yes, we've sold. We had a nice little 7-figure exit. Very excited for this to happen. This is a life-changing event. It happened. It is true. You can sell this stuff and you can become a millionaire. And yes, this podcast does tell you the tips and tricks to become an Amazon millionaire. And also, we have Amazon conversations with all sorts of people across the industry. And I would love to have an Amazon conversation with you if you are learning and wanting to know more about exiting. So if you want to learn more about exiting and jump on a phone call with me for free, just for fun, I love just chit-chatting and having a conversation with people, go ahead and go to zonkompodcast.com/exit. That link will be in the show notes, but if you want, just type it in. It works on your phone. It works on mobile. It works on desktop. Works whatever. zonkompodcast.com/exit. Fill out the form and let's have an Amazon conversation about exiting. Thanks, guys.